So from all the West Valley Chambers, from Westmark, Governor, we thank you for honoring us with your presence and hearing the West Valley State of the State perspective. Please welcome our Governor, Janet Napolitano.
That is the single most determinative variable that you can have. So our institutions of higher education, community colleges and universities, I have challenged in the state of state to double the number of bachelor's degree recipients by the year 2020. We need to do that. I believe that beginning this fall, the fall of 2008, whenever a student enters university, his or her tuition ought to be guaranteed for 4 years. No increase in 4 years. That has a couple of side benefits. One is it helps with planning, so you know what your tuition is going to be. You're not guessing every year what it's going to amount to. And also, it does give young people an incentive to get out in 4 years. And I think many of the parents in this room appreciate that. The third thing is this. As you know, we do have a budget issue this year. We have a deficit. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't keep thinking forward. So here's what I propose. The year 2012 is the year that Arizona will turn 100. That's our centennial year. Today's eighth graders will graduate from high school in the year 2012. So I propose that for eighth graders in every class thereafter, that if they make a contract with us and maintain a B average in high school and stay out of trouble, that they will be able to go to any of our community colleges or universities for free. Free tuition. Talk about thinking forward to what we need to produce out of our education system for the economy that we have, and that's the second chapter in our story. But we have agriculture, we have mining, we have tourism, we have all these great things, but we need to continue to diversify and strengthen the Arizona economy. And if there's any illustration of that need, it's the fact how quickly our economy turned around when housing went down. It demonstrated that we were still too housing dependent. So we still need to grow and to diversify. And we're going to do that in a variety of ways. One, of course, is by increasing the education level of the workforce. Another is to target our economic development strategies. We have now taken all the various economic things, institutions, task force, commissions that were operating at the state level and melded them into one public-private partnership. And we need to continue to fund basic research, because basic research itself helps instigate and to grow an economy. We started something 2 years ago called Science Foundation Arizona. It has, for every dollar we've invested, already given us $9 in federal funds, and it's now bringing in private money. Indeed, last year, the legislature set aside $25 million for research in Science Foundation Arizona. We have already matched that with $25 million in private monies that have been raised and are now into that effort. And through that, we are funding research in personalized cancer treatments, in new sources of biofuel, to give you just a few examples. So those kinds of things are the things that will help us keep developing, growing, and diversifying our economy. Let me pause just a moment on housing, because particularly this area of the state, this area of the valley, the whole subprime debacle hit hard. It hit hard. A few things. I met with the major lenders in our state. We've agreed that for home buyers who have subprime loans, and many of those subprime loans, by the way, what happens is you get into the loan with what they call a teaser rate, a low rate, and then after a year, a couple of years, it escalates very dramatically. And a lot of those home buyers are going to see that escalation this spring. So we need to get ahead of that a little bit. So I met with the major lenders who have agreed that for home buyers who are in the homes, that they will be able to work out and transfer those subprime mortgages into standard prime rate mortgages so that we keep them in their homes. This is not for folks who are in the homes. They're not, not for the speculators and investors, but really for the homeowners. So we keep families that are home from becoming homeless. And then we need to prevent this from happening in the future. So we have already, through the Department of Real Estate, we have begun what we call the Home Buyer's Bill of Rights. and it's on the web, it's available in print, and it tells a potential home buyer all about the financial information they need when purchasing a home, but also about the availability of roads and fire and police, the other things that one should be taking into account when making what for most of us is our largest personal investment. So the Home Buyer Bill of Rights. The other two things are things that are before the legislature. One is the Home Equity Theft Protection Act, as another is a bill that would require the licensing of loan officers. Because what we found is that for the most part, those involved in the lending industry are very ethical, they have high professional standards. But there's no way to ensure that or to make sure those standards are adhered to. So by having a licensing authority and ability, and we will devise that with the professionals in the lending industry helping us, but by doing so, we will prevent some of the fraudulent and deceitful activities that help lead to the subprime lending debacle. So housing, I think, needs to continue to be a focus for us. That brings us to the third chapter of our book, public safety. Of course, a basic need for all of us and a basic service that government needs to provide. We need to keep fighting the gangs. My budget includes funding for the Get 'Em Task Force that has worked with many of your local police departments. It includes funding for more highway patrol officers, for forensics and the crime labs that we need. We also need to keep operational our counterterrorism center, which has trained literally hundreds of law enforcement officers around the state on detecting and responding to potential terrorist acts, including officers from the West Valley, from the communities in the West Valley. And then we need to continue to work on immigration. Now, let me pause a moment here. And let us not lose sight of the basic fact that the federal government's responsibility is immigration. And they have failed. And they're going to have to come back to the table, and we're going to have to get comprehensive immigration reform. But it is highly unlikely that we will get that before the presidential election and before the appointment of a new cabinet and the election of a new Congress. So Arizona has been stepping out and stepping forward in a way that puts us ahead of every other state. We have law enforcement at the border. We're going after fraudulent identification documents through a fraudulent ID task force. We're going after stolen vehicles through a stolen vehicle task force. And those have all been very, very successful. We have, with the Attorney General's office taking the lead, been going after the wire transfers of money to human trafficking organizations. Because you want to seize or get that blood supply away from them, and the blood supply there is the money that they're getting. I've asked the legislature to give me another tool this year, and that is stronger legislation to enable us to go after the drop houses where illegal immigrants are stashed in neighborhoods around the state, particularly in the West Valley. And so the legislature needs to help us on that. But we go after the IDs, we go after vehicles, we go after the money, we go after the drop houses. Now that is a plan and a system designed to get at this industry in Arizona. The next thing we need to do is to implement the employer sanctions law. I signed it last year. It is designed to go after employers who intentionally, knowingly, consistently, and repeatedly hire illegal labor. There's some things in that law that need to be fixed and clarified, and I've given those suggestions to the legislature. In fact, I put them out there when I signed the bill. But the other thing that needs to happen is as follows. When the legislature passed the bill, they didn't put much money behind the enforcement of it. And this is a tight budget year, as I mentioned, and I said, well, where are some funds that we can use? And I have the suggestion, and I propose it to the legislature. Law enforcement each year recovers millions of dollars in monies from criminal proceeds, from going after gangs and racketeers and the like. They're called RICO funds. They can be used for a number of good purposes. For example, last year we used RICO funds to build a totally new crime lab for Southern Arizona. Recently, we've seen those funds being used for things like television advertisements that don't really help us improve the crime rate and to reduce the crime rate. So I am proposing that we restrict the use of RICO funds to core law enforcement functions, like paying investigators, like buying body armor, and like enforcing the employer sanctions law. The fourth chapter, again, particularly applicable to this area of the Valley, is transportation and growth. I say, every time you are stuck in traffic, breathing bad air, muttering under your breath, you are paying a time tax. And for most people, the two most valuable things you have are your money and your time. So it's time to cut the time tax. And what we need is for the legislature to take all the various studies that have been done at the local and regional level now, and to merge those and to have something and prepare it as a statewide transportation plan and prepare it for you, the voters of Arizona, to be able to vote on no later than the year 2009 so that we begin really moving forward on transportation with a statewide vision in mind. And by the way, it can't just be freeway. It needs to include transit. It needs to include rail. Now, that is a statewide transportation plan. Particularly, I think we need to explore rail between Tucson and Phoenix. To me, that makes a lot of sense. It would help offload the traffic from the freeways we all use. Second, on the growth area, we need to go back and resolve the issue of state trust land reform. That involves 9.3 million acres of lands. We need to set aside some of those lands for conservation purposes. We need to give the land department more tools, more avenues with which to deal with those lands. I've been meeting with a bipartisan group of legislators since last summer. We're very close to an agreement on that. I hope to have something to the ballot for you, again, by the fall of 2008. And third, energy. Before the legislature this year will be an omnibus energy bill. It will include requirements for utilities to generate a certain percentage of their energy from renewable sources. It will include standards for appliances and building in terms of energy efficiency. It will include incentives for other renewable sources of energy. There is no reason at all why Arizona should not be the Persian Gulf of solar energy. There really is no reason. And we ought to align our energy policy with it. So transportation, state trust land reform, energy. I can talk about water if you want. I will do the Q&A, but let me get to the fifth chapter of our story. And the fifth chapter of our story is health care. Now, in a flush budget year, I may have come to you with a big health care package, but quite frankly, it's not doable this year. But what we can do are some very positive, again, forward-moving steps to keep more people in health insurance, particularly children. We already have a program in our state. It's called Kids Care. Kids Care insures children whose families make between 100 and 200% of the federal poverty line. But we still have families who have children who cannot get insurance. Oftentimes it's because of a birth defect or a chronic illness or condition. They simply can't buy it. So I am proposing that we start something called Kids Share. And that would enable those parents to buy their insurance through us, to make sure that population of children gets health care. And while we are doing that, many of you have children, older children, on your insurance policies. And maybe one of the things you've noticed is that when they turn 21 or 23, if they're going to school, you cannot buy insurance for them anymore. You cannot pay for it. Well, that group of young adults is our fastest growing population of uninsurance. And I believe that both at the state level, and we're already moving in this direction as a state as an employer, but privately as well, that we can require, to be paid for, but we can require that young people be allowed to stay on their parents' policies to the age of 25. So they don't automatically drop off of insurance. So that way we're dealing with kids with chronic conditions, we're dealing with older kids as we move forward. And there are some other things we want to do in the health insurance realm and the health care realm. We want to, for example, this year, follow up on a project we began last year. Last year, we started a project where we put on the internet the quality ratings for all the nursing homes in Arizona. This year, we want to change our reimbursement rates and simply pay nursing homes more if they provide better quality care, build some incentives into that industry. And last but not least, we want to make sure our veterans are getting the services that they've earned, the benefits to which they are entitled. We have started something called Benefits Counselors. They link veterans. They help them hunt and gather for the benefits. It shouldn't be that hard, but it is. By the end of this year, I would like us to have a veterans benefits counselor within a one-hour drive of virtually every veteran in the state of Arizona. We can do that easily. So education, the growth of our economy, public safety, transportation and growth, healthcare, those are the five big chapters that we are writing the story on this year. Let me talk a little bit about the budget and give you the context. State budget is about $10.6 billion this year. We will miss that mark by over $800 million, probably about $850 million. Now, I have given the legislature a plan on how we fill that gap. We do it three ways. We reduce spending. We bond for school construction instead of paying cash for construction. And we take some money from the rainy day fund. When I began as governor, by the way, we had no rainy day fund. It was zero. And since I've been governor, we've been setting aside money every year. So now that fund is over $700 million in case economically it ever rained again. I think we can agree that it's raining at least a little bit. And so that fund is there to help buffer that issue for us. So that's the three-legged plan before the legislature now, and they are working on it, and as soon as we have a resolution on that, I'll call them in the special session and we'll vote that out. The 09 budget and the 09 fiscal year begins on July 1. We are probably $1.3 billion off the mark in terms of expected revenue we thought we would have. And so on Friday of this week, tomorrow, I will produce and publicize the entire 09 budget, my plan for how we balance the budget given that circumstance. It's available, it will be available online, every single line of it. So if you have any insomnia this weekend, you can turn up the government budget and it'll be there. Or any questions, really, about what's in it. But let me tell you this about my 09 budget. Everything I talked about in this talk with you today is funded in my budget. The budget is balanced and the budget does not raise taxes. We can do that. My proposed 2009 budget leaves money, several hundred million dollars, remaining in the rainy day fund in case the economic downturn goes longer than anybody predicts, but actually goes into 2010. So that we give ourselves a little buffer for them as well. So it's a good plan, it's a smart plan, but it's a plan that keeps moving us forward. And that brings me to my last point with you. We should not use a temporary economic downturn as an excuse to go backwards, to cut education, to restrict the access to university or community college, to not build the roads that we need and the infrastructure that will sustain growth, to not be thinking about how we get more, particularly children, into health care, to not take care of our veterans. A budget downturn is not an excuse for going backwards. A budget issue is one that requires our best management, our best skill, and our best wisdom, really, about how we balance it and continue to move forward. Some things are going to take longer than others than we had thought they would. Some things we won't be able to do immediately. But we should never lose sight about what it is we intend to accomplish with the people of Arizona. And that's what simply is this. We want to write our story so that the legacy we leave our children and our children's children is one that they will look back at on these years at the work we have done, and they will say, by golly, they wrote us a classic. Thank you very much. I am happy to take a few questions, but somebody has to go first. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the question is, the quality of air in the West Valley, particularly in light of the sand and gravel operations that produce a lot of dust in the air, you know, the air in Maricopa County is our pollution has two major sources. One is dust, particulate matter, and the other, of course, is emissions from vehicles. We are working with the county on the dust issues. The legislature last year, in fact, passed the first major piece of air quality legislation in a decade. That has some tools in it that will help. On vehicle emissions, the things I talked about will in the long term, in a way, actually be more important. Because if we do better with transportation, that means more transit options, more ability for people to get out of cars, and if they are in cars, less time on the road. And so when we talk about transportation, you can take out the words transport or take out the word transportation, put in air quality, and you would see an improvement there as well. Good point. Other questions? Yeah.
Governor, could you resolve our doubts and worries about the national ID fears that we have? As a candidate for Senate in LB9, I've been getting a lot of questions from the constituents. They're worried that this will escalate into something that is like a police state, where the authorities can get all of our information and be able to keep it and then add to it so they know where we are and what we're doing at all times and all our activities, even to putting toll roads. These are the things I've heard.
Yeah, well, I remember one time I was doing a talk radio interview and somebody called in and said that I ought to propose getting rid of $10 bills because they heard the government was putting chips in every $10 bill to know where we were. And I thought, I didn't think that we were probably going to, that was going to happen. But in any event, on the driver's license, let's talk about that because I have proposed something and there's in this area. I propose that we provide an optional form of driver's license in Arizona, a 3-in-1 license. You could use it as a driver's license. You could use it as a in lieu of a passport for U.S. citizens coming back from Mexico or Canada. And an employer could rely on it for purposes of the employer sanctions law, because a lot of employers have been saying, to me, we need something other than the federal database, the E-Verify system, to use. The legislature allows us to do that. Again, it would be optional. It would be at minimal cost. But if the legislature says, okay, we would have that optional license available by September of this year. Now, that license and has a chip in it. But all the chip has in it is a random number. To get any information out of it, you would actually have to be able to hack into the law enforcement databases. And quite frankly, if somebody has the wherewithal to do that, they don't need your driver's license chip. You know, they're way beyond that. So I think to give people confidence, nobody is looking to create a big brother state. What we are trying to do is provide people with some practical alternatives. Now, that 3-in-1 license that I propose should not be confused with a proposed federal law called Real ID. And Real ID is something that the federal Congress has proposed or promulgated that would be issued through the Department of Homeland Security. But I will tell you this, looking at the proposed rules for that ID, it is not a national ID, nor is it technologically available for the kind of surreptitious snooping that people are legitimately concerned about. And we don't want government being a snoop or being Big Brother, but we do have some ability for people to go back and forth. We do have some ability to know that people are legally here. So somewhere in there is a balance. I think my proposal for three-year license is the appropriate balance. But I've seen no proposal for any license whatsoever that has anything other than a random number in a chip. And like I said, if you only have a random number in a chip, somebody get your personal, any personal information out of that, they have a resource much greater than anything they need. So that's what I would propose you respond. Yeah.
Governor, I got this in the paper the other day, Roadmap to Crime Prevention. And I think it's a nice thing to do, but $500,000 to $600,000, are there better ways to communicate this? And why isn't Andrew Thomas being responsive to the newspaper inquiries about spending on this? I think it's a partial waste of money.
Well, I'll let Andrew Thomas answer the second question. When I proposed that we restrict the use of RICO monies to core functions of law enforcement, that's the kind of thing I'm saying, look, let's put the monies we have to where we know they will have an impact on the crime rate. And particularly in tough budget times, the county has a tough budget too. I mean, they're dealing with some of the same things we are at the state level. Some of these things, which are nice, maybe are not core. So let's focus on core. And that's why I hope the legislature will move forward on the limitations on the use of RICO funds that I have proposed.
Governor? Len Kirkman, ARP, Arizona. The first document I've seen on a medical school, the University Medical School in Phoenix, was dated 1951. We now have the first class of 24 freshmen in that school. Your father being dean over in New Mexico, clearly that's something that's important to him and you and is to me. Can you tell us where that's going? Because that's clearly optional funding, and there's been talk that medical school funding may dry up in the tough budget years this year and next year.
Yeah. As you know, downtown in Phoenix, the U of A, ASU, and actually NAU have joined together to open a biomedical campus. It includes a medical school for physicians and also will include enlargements of the nursing colleges, pharmacy, bioinformatics, allied health professions. It has already been accredited, and as you said, the first class of students began this year with 24, with the plan over the next 5 to 7 years being that each class of students, we would have 150 in each class. I will, in my budget, be asking the legislature to authorize the funding necessary to build out that project. That's a capital project, and it's a big, you know, you're building a medical school with all the associated laboratories and things that one needs in this day and age. It's going to be about $470 million. But it will provide a great healthcare anchor right there in the central part of the valley. The other thing that we have done and will continue to do is to fund residency programs throughout the state of Arizona. And because one of the things that we've learned is that doctors, many of them end up practicing not where they went to med school, but where they did their residency. And so through that and through our loan repayment programs, we are attracting and trying to attract more physicians and nurses and dentists to underserved areas of our state. So those are all in the planning and in the works. Great.
Your name, I'm going to be Oregon. How optimistic are you that we'll have a statewide transportation initiative this year?
Well, I think the legislature, the first thing we need to do is get them to start scheduling hearings. The critical studies are all going to be completed by March. You know, they can get at it, and we could have something by this fall or by 2009 at the latest. So I think, however, they need to hear from you and have a sense of urgency about this. We have studied and studied transportation projects, I declare. You know, I think we're getting a study tax sometimes. And it's like, you know, it's time to get things in shape enough so that the citizenry of Arizona have the opportunity to express their desires. But they need a little pushing in that regard to get this done. So I would appreciate your help in that effort.
Thank you, Governor. We all know the great job the State Land Department has done in getting maximum dollar for the state land sales. I have a concern regarding the quality of development that's taking place in those lands. It seems to me it's an opportunity to create model communities that are walkable and provide a better standard of life for people, and it seems to be appropriate that we place quality of life on an equal footing with bottom line dollar in developing those state lands. Could you remark on that, please?
Yeah, and that goes exactly to the point I was making about state trust land reform, because here's the way it works. When Arizona was admitted to the Union, we were given land to hold in trust, and when we dispose of those lands, the proceeds go, for the most part, to an education trust fund. Good concept. The problem is that we are limited, that we can only dispose of those lands through public auction. And that inhibits our ability to participate in planning and master developments and things that really go to improving the quality of those lands, so ultimately they bring more proceeds in. And so to kind of free the land department and to enable us to take better advantage of those state trust lands now, we need the reform that I discussed earlier. That's why I've taken it upon myself to meet with some key Democratic and Republican legislators, both sides of the aisle. This is an Arizona issue. It's not a partisan issue. Everything I've talked about is an Arizona issue. These are not partisan elements. But we need to get together, and like I said, we're very close to having something that could be proposed to the voters this fall. Good.
Thank you. Thank you, Governor, for coming out here, and especially thank you for the support that you've given to the city. When you talk about growth and economic development strategies, my concern continues to be our cities continue to give the legislature 14% of our budget, and every year they look at that and say we want more, even though we balance our budget. So my question, I guess, is, and I hope that you'll continue to support, you've been a great supporter of cities when it comes to our shared revenues, and I hope that you'll address that.
Right, and just for the benefit of people in this room, the way we do basically sales tax in Arizona is the state collects it, and then pursuant to a formula, we give it back to cities, and cities use that. They use it to help pay for police. They use it to pay for sanitation, city parks, libraries, all the things that cities are responsible for. And 85 to 90% of people in Arizona live in cities. So if you cut that, it's called urban revenue sharing. If you cut that, you really have an impact very broad-based across the state over 80 to 90% of our populace. And so you are right. In times past, when state budgets have been lean, they have looked to reducing urban revenue sharing or holding some of that money back. I will tell you, in my budget, both my fix for 2008 and my plan for 2009, we do not touch urban revenue sharing. But your voices need to be heard on that as well. My voice is one, and it can be pretty loud, but it needs a lot of company. So, all right. Well, very good. Let me just pause a moment and thank you again. Thank you for your involvement in your communities. Thank you, particularly those of you that are serving in office, for giving of yourselves and of your time. Thank you for being part of this really wonderful part of our state and valley. It's so great to come out here and see everything that is going on and to really think about not only what this place is now, but what it can be in the next 5 to 10 years, and to help us all feel part of like we are building that. So as we confront the day-to-day and the this's and the that's and the bumps in the road, let's not lose sight of all that we are doing, all that we have done, and the story that we are all writing together. Thanks very much.